from Baldoyle to Beaumont.
Community radio for Northeast Dublin. 90.3.
Near FM.
Now, the whole country is in mourning after the brutal assault and murder of young teacher Aisling Murphy in Tullamore last week. The 23-year-old was brutally murdered in broad daylight while out for a run. And it's only natural now that women are now feeling frightened, very frightened indeed, at being out alone. But not only that, I think there's a certain anger around and a call to action by women and men around the country. And to discuss this matter now this morning, while people at this time are taking a minute's silence in the schools around the country. Aisling is now being buried in Tullamore at this moment. And it's very sad to think that a beautiful young light of this world has been taken from her parents and from her family. So I'm joined now by Noeline Blackwell, who is the CEO of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, to talk about this very real fear and how women might stay safe and how new legislation might be brought forward. Hello, Noeline, how are you?
Fine, Adrienne. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's particularly poignant to be having this conversation on the day, on the morning and at the time of Aisling Murphy's funeral. So, of course, our deepest sympathies to all of those who loved her and who have to cope with her shocking and seemingly senseless murder.
Yes, yes. And such a great loss. I was just listening, actually, the other night to music that she had played, and she was such a fantastic musician, you know, and such a beautiful soul. It's just all the more hard to fathom. But I mean, we can talk about, you know, Aisling and how beautiful she was, but it doesn't matter. Any person walking along or running along in broad daylight shouldn't have to be in fear. You know, we're talking about women having keys in their pockets and hold a mace and, you know, have this and have that and go out in groups. But really, should we? Should we have to do that?
Yeah, so in some ways, I suppose to just say that Aisling Murphy's murder in this particular way is fortunately a rare event. But it has raised a parallel conversation about the fact that women, just because of their gender and as a gender, believe with good reason and recognise that they are more vulnerable simply because they are women. And that's to your point at the moment, that when women are reminded of this, because women didn't learn this through Aisling Murphy's death, women were reminded of the need of their vulnerability and of the need to take the special precautions. Not necessarily because they fear being murdered, but that they know that murder is at the extreme end of a spectrum of something that is actually taken for granted in our society, and that is violence by men against women. This isn't an attack on men. It isn't a defensiveness about women. This is actually a fact that women are more vulnerable because of their gender, and that for the most part, they're more vulnerable from men. So that is the problem that has been that women all know about already, and that we are reminded of in the most brutal and most tragic way when we hear of murder. But over the past week, since Aisling's death, women have come out to explain about all of the ways in which abuse is visited on women and is tolerated by the society of people, including women, men and women. We tolerate abuse. And I suppose, our angle on it, coming from the perspective of an organisation which works in relation to sexual abuse against people of all genders, works with people who are harmed by it and works to prevent it in the first place, is we know that abuse can start with smaller things, and that people who get away with abuse or where it is tolerated can grow the level of abuse, so that the fact that people get away with abusing women simply because they're women is a problem for our society.
Definitely. I mean, it's only very recently that I even heard you say it yourself there during the week, that only very recently was it that, you know, to rape your wife, to abuse your wife, was okay. Your wife was the man's chattel, so to speak. And, you know, I think this conversation needs to take place, and maybe a horrific thing like this may bring things together, that some form of legislation is brought into place, that things are taken more seriously. I mean, even with someone who is abused, violently abused in their homes, the amount of effort, the big battle and fight that the woman has to take on, to take on the courts, to take on everything, to leave her home, you know, bring her children off to refuge and that. And the perpetrator is just left, nothing done. You know, it could be years going through all of this. It's horrific.
So there's it's at several levels that this needs to be addressed. You're quite right. In fact, there wasn't a conviction for rape by a husband of his wife in Ireland until this 21st century. You know, it literally is, we are moving from a society where nobody talked about abuse, about sexual abuse, violence against women in public. And if you did, you were quickly shunted off to somewhere else. The state didn't recognise that within a married family that a man could rape until, as you say, quite recently. But also so much of our thinking, so much of our legal structures, so much of our faith structures, so much of our institutions all thought that you did not talk about abuse. You did not talk about domestic abuse. You did not talk about sexual abuse. These were things that were to stay hidden and not spoken about. And you see, this is, people are talking about this horrific murder, but there could be an air at which you could just kind of feel weary, because this is not the first time it happened. And it is doubly tragic that that murder took place on a piece of ground now called Fiona's Way, after Fiona Pender, who was disappeared 25 years ago in the same area, or from the same area, and that no trace of her has ever been found. So we have tragedy after tragedy, and every time people say, this can't go on. Surely we can do better. Surely we can stop abuse building to a level whereby, in a sense, it's, to my mind, I am less shocked by the fact that she was running in broad daylight and this happened to her, as that someone was brazen enough in our society. And I use that kind of bold enough, brazen enough, and assured enough to actually carry out a vicious assault resulting in murder in broad daylight in a populated place, means that there is a lot still to happen to our, to, like, the law is there around murder. The guards are following up on this, but it is about the law and it's also about our society. And I think what has changed this time is that the discussion is coming into a slightly different atmosphere. You're discussing it here on the radio this morning. It has been all over media for the best part of a week. But at the same time, there is a level at which people are less tolerant. Those who suffer sexual abuse are less tolerant, since, for instance, Me Too showed that a lot of people believed that they had to suffer this in silence and that they were the only people involved. To the extent that actually our government, our programme for government at the moment, which was set up 18 months ago now in the middle of 2020, with COVID, I can't even remember my time, but I think it's about 18, a little over 18 months ago, it has put into the programme for government that sexual, domestic and gender-based violence are an epidemic in our society and have to be addressed. So I am hopeful that this discussion that we're having, that the society in which we're living right now is a more fruitful one to actually make it a safer society, whereby, you know, it over time it becomes impossible to consider that a woman might be killed just because she is a woman, or even that a woman might be abused for being a woman. And that's probably going to take a good bit of time, but we need to get there. We need to get to that point. And it is clear from what we're hearing from women, it's not only about not being murdered, it's about feeling safe, about feeling not harassed in the workplace, not feeling harassed walking in public places, not feeling harassed or abused at home, you know. So it's going to take a variety of measures to get there. But we actually can do a lot about it at various levels.
Yes, well, you know, this gender bias, unfortunately, as you say there, it does seem to be hardwired into society that most men, we're not saying all men, but most men just aren't able to see it. And I think, you know, when you see things that go up on videos, we've seen in the past where young teenage boys on a dart platform were able to kick and spit, and, you know, a lady went under the train trying to jump out of their way. And this is allowed to go on. Sometimes you get out of your car and you're afraid to get out of your car in a car park at a Tesco, you know, or a supermarket because you see a gang of guys circling on their little bikes and they're ready to say something or shout some abuse or taunt you, you know. And why should we have to go in fear and there's no repercussion for any of their actions, you know? If they're so young, parents should be responsible, or somebody has to take responsibility for their actions, and it has to say enough is enough, you know.
Yeah, all of that is absolutely true. And I think there's going to be no, if I could, I would put my finger on one thing and say, this is the thing that will be a game changer. But in fact, given that it is really only being recognized at a much wider level as each year goes by, it's going to take a variety of things. So for instance, if you take what you were talking about there in relation to young people, there was a time not that long ago where if you reported something like that to the security people, they might or might not be interested. They might, if they were interested, call the Gardaí. The guards might say, they're only young lads, they're only going around and they're not actually hurting anyone, they're only catcalling at people. And so you need to move from those spaces to where the security people would take it very seriously and would aim to deal with it, and would call the Gardaí, who, to their great credit, have developed a much stronger profile in not tolerating intimate abuse, is what I kind of call it, intimate violence. They've become, during the pandemic, for instance, their response to those who might be at risk of domestic violence was excellent through Operation Free Shift. Now, they obviously have a way to go because their 999 calls did not stand up to scrutiny on that particular thing. But they are making the effort to get there. At the same time, though, youth clubs, places where those kids are playing games, whatever they're doing, all of those places need to be empowered so that there is no tolerance in those places by the coaches, by the people who run them, of any kind of abuse, of any kind of what you might call just under the counter stuff. That must not be tolerated there. And then the other point is that the curriculum in relation to what constitutes consent in the area of healthy relationships, that has not been changed in the school curriculum since 1999. And if you don't have a, I mean, kids spend an awful lot of their time in school. They take more notice of what their peers say in school and what their teachers say often than they do of what their parents do at home. So our schools need to have a way to give young people the language that they need to navigate the world in which they're growing up, which is a world where porn attracts, where porn is visible to them from the age they have a smartphone. And then their parents need to have language. We did a survey last year. It's a substantial piece of work. Focus groups, a survey out to people, a national size survey. And one of the findings of the survey was that Irish people are very embarrassed to talk about sex. And different types of people are more embarrassed than others. And I don't mean sex in a situation of behind your hand or WhatsApp groups or pornography. I just mean sexual activity. They are not prepared to talk about it with their partners, and they're embarrassed to talk about it with anybody. And the most embarrassed are young men of the various groups of people. So we have a situation, and actually in the focus groups, people were saying they often were surprised when they went abroad and found how, frankly, people recognized that sexual activity was a part of life. So if we don't adjust that, we are never going to get to a stage where women are seen as equal to men and everybody respects everybody else. Doesn't treat them as an object, doesn't treat them as a type of fun. They are that people are truly recognized as equal to each other. You can start young, but it's not only there. It has to be in other places as well. It has to be in workplaces where right now, actually, we did another piece of research around sexual harassment in the workplace. And again, I think a lot of people that I say this to absolutely know what I mean before I finish my sentences. There were a couple of surveys out during the year as well of the arts and of the legal profession, and there was the issue of the women of honour in the defence forces, showing that sexual harassment is rampant and that people don't do anything about it. Because if they do, they are seen as the troublemaker. They are seen as the person who is ratting on the group. And very often, they are the people who, if they insist on complaining and challenging abusive behaviour when it happens, they're the people who are eased out of a job, who don't get the promotion. And for that reason, those companies are tolerating abuse in their workplaces as well. So we need that needs to change. That workplaces need to be safe places for people to go. Public spaces need to as well.
Well, this is it. I mean, as Minister Martin said there the other day at one of the vigils that took place around the country, Minister Martin said that men need to take a lead role in changing the culture of violence against women in society. So, as you say, it needs to start from the boys groups, from being open, as you say, to talk about sex, to not have it that, you know, or they're giggling or they're laughing or, you know, it's as you said, a toy or something to play with or something. Mm. You go to other countries in Europe and especially the likes of Sweden or Austria or other countries, and you see the way they walk around naked together in saunas or different places. They're more free about this thing, and that sort of violence isn't as high and prevalent in their society. As you say, we need to, it has to be teaching men, young men, and older men. As you say, in the workplace, women are afraid to go and say that something's happening, that there's sexual harassment or something taking place, because they may be pushed off or never get a promotion or whatever, or they're a troublemaker or whatever, and they have the boys' club and everything's okay. So it really is, it's right across the board, a whole mental change, attitude towards women. I mean, from even the cases of a rape case yourself, I mean, you are the CEO of the Rape Crisis Centre, Dublin Rape Crisis. When a young girl who has already gone through this traumatic experience has to try to bring it to court, it's such a harrowing experience for them. The girl is like the you know, becomes the perpetrator, you know, and has to defend themselves as to what you were wearing and why were you there. And, you know, what, you know, I mean, this is crazy to think that that's the way the court cases go. And that is why so many women don't like to bring it forward to a case, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first barrier is yourself, though. And I don't mean you personally, Adriana, but somebody actually who suffered, who's injured by the harm of sexual violence. The first thing that typically they do, if they're women in particular, is, well, actually, this is true of anyone who suffers a sexual assault. The first thing they do is check their own behavior. What did I do to bring that on myself? So it's not only young boys and men, it is young girls and women who also have to be trained and given the language to understand that there are no circumstances in which an assault is brought on by your own behavior. That these aren't circumstances that you bring on yourself by the clothes you wear, etc. So that's the first. That's the first hurdle. And then, as you say, if somebody wants to go to the trouble of taking it through the criminal justice system, trouble is what they can expect. Now, a lot of people will still do it because they have a strong sense that an injustice was done and that they are entitled to the protection of the law, and they are right. And a lot of people will do it to stop it happening to somebody else. And they are right as well to do it. But it is also true, exactly what you say, that when it comes to going to court in a defended case, the truth is that there is often only the only or the main evidence is going to be the evidence given by the person who brings the complaint, the victim of the crime. Often you won't even hear from the accused. But the complainant will be treated as so the complainant, the person who makes the complaint, the victim of the crime, goes into court. They tend to be the only person giving evidence in the room who has very little support or knowledge of what is going to happen. For a lot of people, it's their very first time in court. Often they would have maybe somebody from the Rape Crisis Centre or family members or a friend or something there to support them, but sometimes they wouldn't. And the others who are there on the prosecution side are the guards, who are well trained in how to give evidence, and the prosecution barrister, who is not acting for the victim, they are acting for the state. So you have this person totally isolated, and the job of the defence, as they see it, is to try and identify any flaw in the evidence by any way that they are allowed to do it. And this is why, when following the verdict in that celebrity Belfast rape trial in 2018, where all of the defendants were acquitted, but where we saw every single bit of the rape trial in our media as well, because those trials weren't held in private in Northern Ireland at the time. The Minister for Justice came out after that and said no victim should have to go through that again. And to his credit, Charlie Flanagan then put an investigation in place, which came up with a report which issued last year and which the current Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, is working her way through to try and improve the system. Now, it's always tricky to change the big ship that is the legal system, but it recognises the need for training of professionals so that they recognise the harm that's done by sexual offences. It means trying to build a system which deals faster with them. So there are some steps underway already in order to fix the criminal justice system, as well as so we are, for instance, we're doing a piece of awareness, a long-term piece of awareness raising awareness nationally around consent. We're going to kind of be rolling that out over the course of the year on foot of the research we did. But the Department of Justice also recognises that the criminal justice system needs to be fixed, and so too does the mindset which tolerates sexual violence and abuse, and the mindset that does blame people, that assumes in some way that there is an entitlement on the part of abusers to carry out their abuse. But it's not maybe that unusual that abusers think that, because of the structures we've had in our society where, going back to what we said at the start, women were owned by men. Women were put in the same category as what were then called lunatics and children. In other words, they were people not capable of, they didn't have their full mentality about them, and they needed to be owned, protected, owned, told what to do, ordered, and if a man would do that, then he was left to do it. So it's really like it's only just 100 years since women on the whole got the vote, and it's less time than that women were on juries. You know, it's not that long since it was a shame for a married woman to go out to work. It was a shame on the family, on the man as well. So we have to see this in the context of something where we are now seeing the impact, we are seeing the tragic and extreme impact of our failures to deal with it when we see the kind of violence that was inflicted on Aisling Murphy. But we see it every day. Before this day is out, both you and I, Adriana, will probably see another example of where before people would turn away, would tolerate it, would engage in it. A man sent me just a note there over the last couple of days saying, as a result of what he was hearing from everyone at the moment, he was going to be more conscious of his presence and of his shadow. And I thought that was a good start to understand that often for men, they didn't even know that women had to have this extra layer of security assessment in every situation they went into. And to know that that exists, and to try and ensure that you're part of that solution is a good start for everyone. But it is going to take legislative change. It is going to take all of government being committed to ending this kind of violence. And that's why we are really hoping that the national strategy that is to be rolled out, I think in March, Minister McEntee said, that she said it would be all of government, and the Taoiseach said it would be all of government. I hope it is. And I hope it is comprehensive, because we need that leadership approach, as well as each single one of us checking our own behaviour and checking the behaviour of those we live with and those we love, that just to make sure that everyone is on the same page.
Yes. I mean, even to stopping a young child, you know, and just stop them straight away in their tracks if they say something derogatory towards a woman, if they make any comment, you know, just to keep putting it home that this is not okay. This is not okay, and we're not going to tolerate it from the very early stages. It is good to see that Minister Martin has says that he's going to try to roll out and publish a national strategy on the issue in terms of developing a zero tolerance to violence against women. And I'm sure you'll be working away on that with him and helping in any way you can. It's been fantastic to talk to you. It's dreadful that we have to come together in this way after such a shocking thing, but hopefully changes will be made. I was only talking there last week on the show here to a young man who is a volunteer with a Dublin boys group, and they bring them out and they encourage them to talk about their feelings. They bring them out on walks. They discourage alcohol. You know, it's not a group like that that they get together. It's a social group where they get together and can come and talk about their feelings. And I think all of these positive things, when you see these happening, you see maybe there might be a change for the good soon.
Exactly.
Yes, yeah. Please God, there will be.
And Adriana, I might just say, just before I go as well, you might be saying it afterwards anyway, a lot of people are upset just at the moment, and just like to be aware, because, you know, it kind of reminds a lot of people about assaults that happen to themselves as well. So just our helpline, the 24-hour helpline, is there for anyone who might want to contact it at 1-800-77-88-88.
You're very good. I was just about to announce that, but thank you so much, Nolene. You're very good. Thank you. Thank you for taking the call this morning.
My pleasure.
I'll talk to you again, please God. Take care. God bless.
Bye-bye.
From Baldoyle to Beaumont, Community Radio for Northeast Dublin, 90.3.
Near FM.